This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 349 for Wednesday, February 12th, 2020. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. If you cannot tell, I am still sick, and I am angry that I am still sick. So, instead of doing all the talking myself, I have the one and only Lou Page here to help me with things. You might know him from Zombies Ate My Podcast, but of course you can find him at Busy Zombie Lord on all the social media that matters. Lou, we joke about this all the time, but it has been a minute since you have been on the show because you have a story to share. So how the heck are you, man?
So just before the new year, I was bringing in firewood. I don't have a banister on the steps on my side porch. It's three steps. It's maybe 2.5 feet tall, which is the bare minimum to not need a banister. I've shoveled these steps. I brushed them off. I did not salt and sand, however. And I stepped on the one piece of ice I missed.
Oh, no.
And I went airborne. I crash landed on what I thought was my butt. And I was like, that's okay. I'll walk this off. And I broke my right femur into three pieces.
Oh my God. Like, I can't even imagine. I have broken a limb, but it was a wrist. So
yeah,
not a major bone like that. And not anything that would impede my movement.
Right? I broke it about 1.5 inches below where the ball joint is.
Oh, good.
If I had broken it 1.5 inches higher, I would have needed a new hip on top of the rod I have installed in my leg right now.
Oh my gosh. So you're now a bionic man. So we've got that now.
Yeah. I have a titanium rod in my right leg.
Metal detectors are going to love you.
I'm not allowed to go through them anymore. I have to be pat down if I ever fly.
Wow.
I have about, and the way the bone broke, the reason it was in three pieces is it was almost like a spiral fracture.
Oh, wow.
I never broke the skin, thank God.
Oh, man.
But it basically, when I landed, it like popped the bone in half and then popped a huge chunk off where I landed. So they had to wire that all back together, run a rod through, and put four screws in to hold me all together. I had about 50 staples holding the side of my leg back together after they cut me open.
Oh. See, you know what? Like, I mean, as much as I cringe at the idea of breaking a femur, I kind of feel like the surgery would be worse. Like having process.
So when I landed, my wife happened to be like on her way out the door to come help me. And Erica looks down at me, and I am laying on the pavement, and I'm laying on my side. And she's like, did you fall? And I said, uh-huh. And it hurts. I did a very similar thing last winter when I was snow blowing. I fell. I slipped. I landed on my butt on the ice, and I got back up. And I had a bruise.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all Erica was thinking it was. And so she comes down the steps, and I'm like, be careful. And she's like, yeah. And then she proceeds to be like, move your foot. And I'm like, yep, I can move my foot. I can't move the leg. And she's like, that's okay. Just give it a minute. You gotta give it a minute. And I'm like, okay. And then I proceeded to realize that my leg felt like it was being pulled in two different directions.
Oh.
And it hurt. But it wasn't like, oh my God, I'm going to scream. I have extremely high pain tolerance. It hurt, like, bad, but it's hard to explain. I didn't feel like I should be screaming. And she goes, hold on, let me just see if I can move your leg. And she grabbed my leg and she attempted to move it for me. And that's when I screamed.
Oh, wow.
And she goes, this is bad. And I said, yeah, you need to call an ambulance. And she was like, are you sure? And I'm like, yes, call an ambulance right now. At the same time I broke my leg, the entire day was a disaster. The next town over from me, Standish, had a 6-car pileup on a back road that never has this. So all the ambulances from my town were called to that accident on top of what was going on. And this happened at the same time we called for my ambulance.
Oh.
So the town south of me had took 20 minutes to send an ambulance to me.
Man.
In the meantime, I'm laying in the laying on the pavement, and Eric is like, do you want water? Do you want anything? I'm like, in all honesty, hon, they're going to give me medicine. I know how this is going to go because I've looked at enough. I'm in insurance. I'm like, I know how this is going to go.
Yeah.
So don't give me any water because it could screw it up, whatever they're going to give me. I just got to deal with this.
Yeah. At least
my neighbor.
At least you're lying on the cold ground, right? So at least like icing and like numbing.
Yeah.
You know, like, so
yeah.
I don't know whether it's good that it's masking pain because you don't know how bad it is, but at the same time, you're also perhaps relieved that you've got some ice happening.
By the time the ambulance got there, my thigh had swelled to about twice its size.
Oh my gosh.
And that was when they gave me the bad news. They said, oh, hey, we're going to come over. We're going to break this thing and we're going to insert it up your nose and spray you with an immediate pain med because you probably hurt. And I went, yeah, I do. And they said, and then we're going to come back with this big metal ratchet. And I said, what do you do with that? And they said, we yank your leg back into place.
Oh.
So they strap on this thing that comes all the way up to my hip. And it has literally a ratchet crank on it. They strap it into my foot and they literally, the guy goes, this is going to hurt. And I've never really screamed aloud for Erica. She's never seen me in pain. And when she heard me screaming, she was like, wow, this must really hurt.
Yeah, I can.
And then they, I'm like on the verge of passing out. They put me in the ambulance and they drive me to Maine Medical Center, which is about a 20-minute ride from my house.
Right.
And that was when they told me, oh yeah, we're going to put you in an emergency room. You should be all set. We're going to get a surgeon to operate on you. I sat in the emergency room for 48 hours with my leg in a traction device. They did not operate on me until Monday.
So I remember talking with you because you of course told me that you'd broken your leg and we talked briefly and I was checking in to make sure that you were okay. But remind me as to why, because I remember you were waiting for surgery and that was like a big thing, but there was a reason for it, wasn't there?
Okay. So they kept telling me they didn't have an operating room was what they kept telling me when I was in the emergency room.
Right.
I didn't find out until 3 weeks later when I went for my actual doctor visit, why they didn't perform the surgery. And apparently the surgeon that was on staff for the weekend had never done one of these rod insertions.
Oh.
And refused to do the procedure. And he made me wait until the guy who does orthopedics came in because the guy was terrified if he touched me, he was going to screw it up.
Well, I mean, in one way, sure. Like you get, right. You're getting the better care. But communicate that. Like
they didn't communicate anything.
Yeah. I mean, you don't necessarily want to say that you're, you know, scared of doing it, but you could at least go and say, like, look, I don't have the expertise. You have a very serious break, but the guy that can fix you is going to be here Monday. It's going to suck, but you will get a better procedure if you wait. Like that's all it takes. Like it's a 2-second conversation.
Instead, they just left me in an emergency room where they kept coming in with shots of heparin to stick me in my leg. And I'm like, what's this for? And they're like, oh, this is so you don't blood clot out and die. And I'm like,
awesome.
I'm like, awesome. So when's the procedure? And they're like, we're still waiting.
So we're giving you like the worst case scenario that we're trying to prevent, and we're going to attempt to prevent that for 48 hours. That's not a long time to sit there and thinking about that.
So my leg hurt, like the bone broke, and it definitely hurt.
Yeah.
But what hurt most was that I was in that Ratchet Clank device for 18 hours before they took it off me. And then after that, you ever seen when they in like movies when they show the guy with his leg up in the air and he's got like a 40-pound weight pulling on his leg at the end of a bed? That was me until my surgery.
Ugh.
And that hurt more than the broken leg. So they kept coming in and being like, "How's your pain?" I was like, "It hurts." And they were like, "How bad? Scale of 1 to 10. 8. They're like, "We need to get it down to like a 3. And I was like, "If you say so." Yeah. They came in, they're like, here's all the pain meds we can give you. And I'm like, "I don't take pain meds." They're like, "Don't care. You need to take these now." Okay. So they literally were giving me the max dosage they could give a human being. And I'm still like, "My leg hurts." "Your pain meds didn't do anything."
Oh man. He's like, "Scale of 1 to 10, how much does it hurt? How much does that weight on the end of the bed weigh? 40 pounds? 40. Between 1 and 10, it's 40. That's my answer."
Yeah. And then afterwards, they get the thing. The surgeon tells me 5 minutes before my surgery, "Oh, yeah, no. I'm going to insert a titanium rod, and I'm going to put 4 screws in, and you'll be weight-bearing when you recover." And I'm like, "Weight-bearing? What does that mean?" He goes, "Oh, you can stand on it." And I'm thinking, awesome, I'm going to be out of surgery. I even had my wife call my boss and be like, "Hey, can I work from home the next couple of weeks? I think I can start working from home in like 3 days. And my boss is like, "Louis, you have far more recovery than you think you do." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, he said weight bearing. What they don't mean, that they don't explain to you about weight bearing, is standing on the leg still hurts.
Yeah.
It's just not broken anymore.
Yeah.
So I hopped out of bed the first moment they let me on a walker and made my way to the bathroom. And I wanted to scream all the way to the bathroom.
Oh, man. The only thing that I've ever had that impeded my movement was I've got 3 swollen discs in my lower back, and they can be angry or not depending on the week. But I had I had a really bad back spasm, I want to say about 6 years ago, maybe 7 or 8. It must be 7 or 8 now. But I mean, like, it's the closest to big bone pain that I've ever had. Like, I could be doing something in the kitchen and, you know, going to reach for a glass of water, and like something would happen and I would just, like, everything would stop. And the only thing that would keep me from going down on one knee would be probably one hand on the counter, and the fact that going down on one knee would hurt more. Like, it just, and it's like this, it's this strange sort of deep pain. Like, we get bumps and bruises, we get cuts, you know, like we have those kind of things that happen, scrapes and bangs and things. And it's painful, and bruises can be deep, but it's still all very surface.
Mm-hmm.
Until you break a bone. And when you have that kind of deep inside pain, there's just something so unnerving about it. Like, it's you're like, "Oh shit, I can't control this." Like, I can see a cut and patch it. I can see a bruise and ice it. You know, I can heat and ice a sprained muscle, but I couldn't figure out for the life of me what to do with my back. When I broke my wrist in 2002, I didn't even think it was broken. Like, it hurt.
Yeah.
I had sprained both. I fell and I caught myself with my hands. I had essentially what was most people refer to as a snowboarder sprain, but I wasn't snowboarding.
Yeah.
And I sprained both wrists, and they were both really sore, and I was icing and doing all the things that I normally do for a sprained, you know, because I played ball for years and I sprained my ankles all the time. And wasn't until I was home and one wrist was really sore but functional, and then my other wrist, my right wrist, I couldn't hold a glass of water. Like, I could not pick it up. And I told my mom, who's a nurse, and she said, "Sounds like you broke your wrist." I said, "If I broke my wrist, wouldn't I be in a lot more pain?" She goes, "Well, yes and no. You have a pretty high pain tolerance. You always have had. So you probably need to go check it out." And so I went in thinking like, well, I'll go first thing in the morning and get the x-rays. And everything was fine. The doctor was moving my wrist. And for a little while, I thought, oh, you know what? This might be okay. Like he moved it left. He moved it right. He moved it up. He moved it down. It wasn't until he pinched at the base of my thumb and put pressure across the scaphoid bone and moved my wrist at the same time. Full grown man, I hit the floor. Like I went down, I went down on a knee. I have never had pain like that. And
yeah,
I can't imagine, dude, your femur, like that's the biggest bone in your body. Like
I had doctors showing up in the emergency room being like, you need to explain to us. You're 37 years old. Breaking this bone is almost impossible.
But this is the thing, like when you told me that you had broken your femur, like it was a very quick kind of like broke femur in hospital, like it won't be on show. I'm okay, but like lots of things are going on. You know, sent you well wishes and stuff. And it wasn't until later that we touched base. But when you first told me, I was like, oh my God, like was he in a car accident? Like did he get hit by a car? Like I'm running through my brain the amount of force that's needed to break a femur.
It's 4,000 pounds of pressure.
And you achieve this.
Being airborne
when
I fell. And when I came down on the corner of a step.
Corner of a step. Wow.
So what ended up happening was I'm 170 pounds.
I was going to say, you're not a big dude.
I'm 170 pounds. I probably came down at about 5 feet, 3 or 4 feet maybe, airborne on that leg. Yeah. And it was just enough to bust it.
Just enough. Because and probably if you had landed on pavement, you probably would have done the same thing you did last year, but worse.
Yep,
but
I would have just been bruised and had been sore, and that it would have walked it off.
Wow.
So that's been a whole ordeal. I was on a walker for 2 weeks. Then I moved to crutches. I am down to. They recommend now when I leave the house, I am on one crutch.
Right.
But when I'm around the house right now, I hobble around without a crutch. They said that that's okay because they want me to build strength back in my
back. Right. Yeah. Like the worst thing that you can do is rest. Like you need to keep moving.
Yeah.
That's usually the prescription is just like keep moving as best you can.
When I first came home, I couldn't lift my foot more than 3 inches, maybe total off the ground.
Wow.
Getting in and out of a car, I still do actually. I have to lift my foot into the car before I get in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't lift my leg high enough to get it in, but I have permission to drive.
Wow.
Which actually, the first day I drove hurt, cause the pivot on my ankle, and in my calf, all the muscle, in all honesty, once they put the rod in, it's not the bone that hurts anymore. It's all the muscles they screwed up.
Oh, yeah.
Do everything.
Oh, yeah.
So I've basically been waiting for all my muscles to heal.
Yeah. No, and that's, I mean, my mother fell this fall in church basement, and it wasn't a step thing. She just kind of tripped and hit the hard concrete floor in the church. Didn't break her hip, thank God, because it would have been a really rough recovery because my mother's in her 70s. But
yeah.
But at the same time, like her soft tissue injury took weeks, like probably she was probably still hobbling around a little bit at Christmas time. Like she was probably 8 or 12 weeks before she was back to normal. And even then, I mean, it's the winter, so they're not walking very much because my folks walk every day, but mom has to go to Aquafit because the buoyancy has helped her recover faster because it's less impact and stuff. So she's still sore. And it's just like, it's crazy how long soft tissue takes. Like my back, I mean, the scaphoid bone in my wrist took 3 months in a cast. It was terrible, but it's also a really difficult bone to heal. It was a surface fracture. So it wasn't broken clean through. It was like cracked on the surface, like dried mud. That's kind of how they explain it.
Yep.
So that took forever, but my back, like getting my back back in shape took 6 months or more. Like it's so hard. And that was like a spasm. It wasn't like it was cut into for surgery. Like, you know, things were not separated. There was no invasive stuff.
The funniest part about all of it is they're telling everybody that asks, that's a family member, they're telling them, oh, he's fine. He just fractured his femur. So everybody in my family's thinking fracture means like I cracked it.
Hmm.
And I'm like, and then they show me the x-rays and I'm like, that's not a fracture. That's broken.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, it is broken. That's what we call a fracture. And I'm like, yeah. No. Everybody that I know that says fracture means it's cracked. This is broken. It's in pieces. They're like, yeah, it's fractured.
Yeah. Fracture is the proper medical term for everything. But
yes.
People just think they break is in common language is just a clearer communication of what's happened.
Yes.
So yeah.
My father, the first weekend I was home, my father flew up from Florida and spent the weekend with me because he was worried about me.
That's nice.
And so that was nice. He came up, he reorganized my shed for me. He said, I got to do something for you while I'm here. Let me go take a look in your shed. And he goes, oh, that's a disaster area. I said, yeah, I broke my leg. I was trying to fix that when I broke my leg.
Yeah.
And he goes, don't worry about it. He bought me a thing. He hung up all my tools that were out in the shed.
Nice.
He folded up my lawnmower. He made sure my snowblower started. And I've lucked out. My neighbor next door has been fabulous. He's been coming over with every storm we've had and snow blowing my driveway
for me. Oh, nice.
So that we can get in and out.
It's nice when you've got, you know, neighbors and community that can kind of pitch in and help out. And
it's been very helpful because Erica is also now 16 weeks pregnant.
I was about to say. Yeah.
And they really don't want her doing stuff. So.
No, they don't. Oh, man. So before we move on, how's Erica doing? Like, I mean, are you guys starting to feel excited or has it been mostly focusing on the leg?
No, we've been very excited. Unfortunately, because of my leg, I missed out on a couple of her doctor's appointments that I was supposed to go to with her. But the important one is in 4 more weeks, and that's where we find out gender.
Okay.
So I will be going to that one.
Nice.
Thankfully. And everything has been going according to plan. As far as we know right now, the baby is healthy. There's no problems. Erica didn't have that much morning sickness. It was maybe 2 weeks. And even then, it wasn't that bad. She only lost her cookies twice, I think.
So
that wasn't bad.
Good. Well, I'm glad that everybody's doing well. I knew that you were doing okay, you know, shortly after the surgery and you started talking about your recovery and stuff, which is going faster than they expected. So that's, you know, awesome. And
yeah,
I'm sure good for your sanity too, I'd imagine.
Well, the biggest problem was I was ready to work. I can work from home. I can work remotely from my job. I was ready to work 5 days after I came home.
Hmm.
I was going stir crazy my second week at home. And I needed my doctor to fill out paperwork so that I could work from home or I couldn't work from home.
Right.
That was the way it worked.
Yeah.
And it took my doctor almost the whole first 3 weeks of when I broke my leg for me to work, to fill out the paperwork and send it to my insurance so that I could work from home.
Mm.
So I spent 3 weeks at home. I think I watched everything on Netflix. I was literally watching garbage that I didn't even like because I just needed something to do.
Wow. Yeah.
And it to the point where Erica was coming home and being like, what did you do today? Well, I watched this, 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 and this. She's like, you watched like 3 seasons of a show? And I was like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When there's no commercials and nothing else to do and you're stuck there, like I can see it. When I was sick last week, I can't believe it's only been a week. It feels like an eon. But the 2 big days that I had that fever, I watched the Crisis crossover with WB and the entire second season of Titans on Netflix. Like within 48 hours, like I had gone.
Wow.
Because I wasn't sleeping. Like I wasn't sleeping. And I was like, well, if I'm awake, I might as well medicate and just watch stuff. So there was one day that I was up from like 1 a.m. until like 8 or 10 the next day. Like I was just destroyed. Like it was, I was probably feeling worse for lack of sleep, but like I couldn't sleep. I had a fever and it was almost better to kind of try to kick the fever by staying up and medicating than it would be to sleep. Because the problem when you sleep, when you're sick, is like you need the sleep, but it's 8 hours of no drugs, no water. You're not, you know, clearing your nose or doing any of that kind of stuff. So when you get up the next morning, you feel like ass. And so I was tired, but at least I was numb. Like I just, you know, I wasn't really feeling it. I was just kind of sitting on the couch. The hardest part in this week physically has been now because I do have back problems, which is why I keep active. But sitting around all last week and getting better really annoyed my back. Like I this weekend was terrible. I didn't sleep very well because I was just constantly dealing with stuff like that. So, but yeah, like when you're sitting home and you have to be there, and I mean, I like taking breaks and watching Netflix. I like escaping into shows. I don't necessarily want to sit there for 8 hours and watch stuff.
No.
With a fever, you really don't feel like moving. So like, that's different than having a broken leg where like cognitively you're there. Like you are just, you know, bored to tears. You know, you just can't move. I can,
On a plus side, the hospital had Wi-Fi.
There you go.
I was sharing a room with a 75-year-old guy who was in there for 4 different procedures. Wow. And was deaf as a doornail and literally watched PBS all night long, which is public television, which is like really like
terrible.
Like, yeah, it's bad.
It's awful. Yeah.
And so he's literally watching that at full volume all night long. And I went, you know what? I plugged in my phone, so I was all charged. I put my Bluetooth headphones on, and I was like, you know what? I just bought a bunch of movies on Vudu. I'm going to sit here all night long and watch movies till I fall asleep. Mm-hmm. And these noise-canceling headphones are going to help me.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Well, we should probably get into the meat of the show. I'm glad that you are on the mend and returning to your regular habits. And I'm sure we will have lots to talk about since you've consumed quite a bit. So
yes.
I'm going to let you do most of the talking because I have been watching some stuff, but it's not a whole lot. And I don't have a lot to say about it yet because I'm still kind of diving in. But a little bit of housekeeping to get out of the way. I am in the process of updating some of the Citadel Cafe archives to YouTube. I'm going to have the link to the channel in the show notes this week. And I have a favor to ask of all you listeners out there. I would like to have a custom channel URL. I want it to be youtube.com/thecitadelcafe. I can't do that until we have a certain number of subscribers. So I'm going to provide you with the link. You don't have to stay. You don't have to listen on YouTube. I would imagine if you're like me, you listen to podcasts on a podcast app or some other way. Or potentially if you're one of our Discord or Patreon members, you're listening on the Patreon page or Patreon RSS. But the YouTube thing, I've learned this from the Spawn Chunks, and I'm going to be uploading podcasts weekly to YouTube for discoverability. We talk about a lot of pop culture. We talk about a lot of popular films and things, video games, etc. And I think it will help grow the audience. It certainly helped us with the Spawn Chunks. Now, Spawn Chunks being about Minecraft and YouTube are kind of like hand in hand. Your audience is basically on YouTube. And so we have a lot of younger listeners that use YouTube for podcasts, music, video, everything, that they just live there. I feel like the Citadel Cafe listeners are a little bit older and probably have other ways. However, just being found on YouTube and then someone saying, oh, cool, I'll subscribe to this on my favorite podcast app, that I think will help us. So I'm in the process of uploading a small archive. I was going to say short, but nothing we do is short. Small archive from episode 300 to now. Once that's all up there and I have all the notes and everything and the links to all the things done, then it's just going to be weekly. I'll be publishing it on YouTube shortly after I publish it on the RSS feed, and it'll just go up at both places roughly at the same time. And then people can just choose where they'd like to listen, and it's all good. But for now, the link is going to be in the description. You might be able to find us if you search for the Citadel Cafe on YouTube, but for now, I'll put the link in the description of the show notes this week. If you can click on that and subscribe and share it with your friends that do live on YouTube, then it would help us out a great deal. And it's free. It costs you nothing. I'm just asking for a solid, if you don't mind. So please check it out on YouTube, share it around, and hopefully you'll see it come up there in the future. It's just audio. It's just an image of the title card that I put up every week on the blog, and just audio. So there's no video. Lou and I are not going to be waving at you on YouTube, because one of the things I like about podcasting is I don't have to shower or shave or worry about it when I do it. It's one of the perks, I think. So we have a listener email this week. It is from Mark D. I love that you guys are sending in messages. Keep them coming. It's always fun conversation. And this is about what could be next for Star Wars. Hello. First off, thank you for such amazing geekiness. You're welcome. The Star Wars talk, especially the question of what's next, makes me hope they go into a couple of different directions. The Darth Bane trilogy would be good. The book are almost cinematic. We've had 40 plus years of the good guys winning. Let's see a pure Sith story. And then Thrawn. I really hope they tap into this character. Ever since he was introduced in the original Timothy Zahn books, I was 18 or 19 at the time, now 45, I've wanted more. He's almost like a space Sherlock Holmes, and he always has a companion who he is teaching. Of all the new Star Wars novels, the Thrawn books are some of the better ones. Again, thank you for the show. Regards, Mark. Thanks so much for the message, Mark. I'm glad that you enjoyed the Star Wars talk. I think that's probably one of my favorite episodes as of late. Johnny and I had a really good time on that show. Lou, do you want to, like, where are you standing with the potential of where they might take Star Wars?
The rumor I've heard is they're going to dip into the Old Republic, at least for another movie or two, because they don't want to touch what's already happened and start doing future stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
we're going to get something way, way in the past that has nothing to do with Skywalker. We're going to have nothing to do with the Emperor. There's not going to be a reference to a Death Star. I think we're going to get something. The implication I've heard is that they want to start telling stories from the Knights of the Old Republic era.
I would love that. That's kind of my fingers crossed. I hope they do it because
that stuff was also considered canonical
right
until recently, and then they recently did a bunch of stuff that made that stuff canon. I see that it's going to, I feel it's going to be very, very unlikely that we get anything told from the perspective of a villain. I don't think Disney's going to want to do that. They after some of the flops they've kind of had, where Solo and Rogue One were not exactly huge hits. Mm-hmm. They did well, but not as expected. I think they're going to play it safe for a while.
And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Sith being the evil sorcerers. Like that's kind of, I like the black and white of Star Wars. Like I enjoy very clearly knowing Darth Vader, villain, got it. Like I'm in, you know, I'm okay with that. I love the idea of doing the Old Republic because, like you said, it could be so far in the past that nothing that we know in the Star Wars universe will matter. The feeling of it, you know, like the fact that there's lightsabers, the fact that we all know what the Force is, that will help. But we don't need to know people, lineage. We don't have to worry about any of that stuff. It's just going to be old enough that there's a lot of Jedi and a lot of Sith. And that means cooler battles and more, you know, robust kind of storytelling. It'll be more... more adventurous, I think, and less sneaking around, which I think would be really, really fun. Plus, one of the best things about Star Wars is that, granted, there's spaceships and that everything is sci-fi. It's science fantasy. It feels gritty. The Millennium Falcon is not streamlined. Like it looks kind of like a hunk of stuff stuck together that flies. So by going too far in the future, like technology has to become more advanced. That's the nature of it. And then Star Wars doesn't really feel like Star Wars if it's too sleek, right? It was one of the biggest criticisms that they had when Lucas did the prequels was that Naboo and the starfighters and everything there was very slick. It felt very, mm-hmm. very like 50s kind of Flash Gordon type stuff. And it didn't fit what most people felt was Star Wars because the future episodes, the stuff that happens 40, 50 years down the line, well, maybe 20, 30 years down the line, X-Wings are chunky. Y-Wings are chunky. B-Wings look pretty cool, but they're the latest, greatest, right? Stuff in Star Wars, it's not like Aliens in terms of how gritty it is, but it's still kind of like backwater, cobbled together stuff, especially when you're dealing with the Rebellion. So if you go back in time with the Old Republic, you can still have spaceships and all that kind of stuff, but then you can make them as chunkier and low tech looking, as gritty and as like space Western as you want, because there's not going to be an expectation of things to be high tech. Right. If anything, it's probably going to be pretty low tech.
Right.
So that I think would be more interesting. It removes the solution in one big red button. You know, like there's no Death Star. You'd have to actually have, you know, a decent adventure and a decent fight, you know, to do stuff like that, which I think would be cool. Plus it opens up a whole other design aesthetic, which is one of my favorite things about Star Wars. Like who knows what ships from the Old Republic would look like, you know? Like I know we've got some stuff from video games and we've had some sort of thing, but like in a film, if that's the first time they do it in a film, then they could just, it's carte blanche. Like you could do,
they can do whatever they want.
Whatever they want. And it would be so, so good. I would be more on board. Now to what Mark says about Darth Bane, I'm not familiar with Darth Bane. I think it's the bald guy with the white head. I could be wrong. Again, I'm cool with more Sith. You're not going to get a Sith movie. Like you're not going to get a Deadpool, you know, or a Venom sort of situation, but having either a villain that's more fleshed out, better than Kylo Ren anyway, would be fantastic. Like I don't want a juvenile villain. I want some guy that's older than me, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, looks older because of the Sith, you know, the dark side has kept him alive longer than he probably should, and has that kind of gravitas, you know, a deep villain. I would love that. Or in the Old Republic situation, more than one, like several of them would be also be kind of an interesting threat because we've never seen that. In the current version of Star Wars, it's always two, master, apprentice, and then eventually one overthrows the other and gets a new apprentice, and that's just how it works. In terms of Thrawn, I unfortunately think the ship has sailed. I think if you don't know, Mark, Thrawn is in the Rebels cartoons, and well done, obviously tamed down for cartoons, but still very well done and still pretty evil. Like he, you know, kills people. It's not, you know, it's not a show for 5-year-olds. It's got some bite to it. But because of that, I don't know we're going to get Thrawn in major motion pictures going forward.
I worry about that too. I haven't finished, but I've enjoyed my time with The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched the last two episodes.
Really?
Erica wants to watch them with me, and she hasn't been in the mood. So I've been like, all right, well, we'll just wait. But I just, some of the stuff they've done in that show, as much as I've enjoyed it, sometimes a couple of things feel a little almost ham-fisted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've been like, they're towing a fine line here, and I like it right now, but if they went too far in one direction and it became pandering to the audience, this could go bad real fast.
They tow that line, and in some ways they cross it for me, but that's a personal taste with me because I'm not a big Taika Waititi fan, so that's kind of like where they lost me. But in general, overall, I don't feel that they crossed it in a way that I can't forgive. You know, like your fears do not come true. I'm sure that you guys finish it, it will be satisfying and fun. And I just love Cara Dune. I want to see more of her. I hope they have her in the second season as well. Like I think she's a fantastic character.
You've heard the news, right?
I know that they're doing a second season, and I know that it's happening in October, or it will be released in October, but I know
it's being released in October.
Yeah.
So we're going to get it in less than a year's time.
Yeah.
So that's good news.
Yeah. No, that's great news. And I would hazard a guess that they were probably writing them, potentially ready to film them, if not filming them already when they released, like within weeks, I'm sure that they had the green light.
I'm sure they did, because they probably went, we don't have anything on Disney Plus. We need to keep the people.
No. And so the thing is, like, I don't remember the numbers, so I can't quote the story directly, but I was listening to Daily Tech News Show, and they were talking about streaming number reports from Netflix, Hulu, Prime, and then Disney Plus, and there's a couple other ones that come in there. But, like, the numbers that Disney Plus was putting up within 3 months were... Well, they were in the list. They were being mentioned in the same breath as Netflix and Prime and everything else, right? So it was like, okay. they weren't at the top. They were probably at the bottom, but it's the growth over such a short period of time that I think has garnered some attention. And we now, with the Super Bowl ad, we've got a glimpse at what is going to be happening with the WandaVision stuff was look weird, but then we've
I'm not sold on that, but the other stuff looked good.
Yeah, I mean, Falcon and Winter Soldier looks fantastic. People are going to watch Loki do anything. I can't say that I'm a diehard fan. I mean, I'll watch it. I'm not going to say no, but, you know.
I'm not a diehard Loki fan, but I have a funny feeling they're going to tell an interesting story. I think it's going to be more of like a comedic thing. I have a funny feeling. Mm.
I'm hoping we get more Asgard and like lore stuff, because that's the kind of thing that I really miss about the Thor films. I prefer the Asgardian type stuff to like the Ragnarok type thing. Well, sorry, the Ragnarok and his sister Sif. No, Sif is the girl. Is the other girl warrior? What's his sister?
No.
Death.
I can't. Death. I don't remember what her name was.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible.
I've watched that movie like six times.
But yeah, it's a great film. But I like that stuff. I enjoy a lot more than the adventure on the war planet or whatever it was with the Hulk and stuff. Like I preferred the interactions with Asgardian related stuff. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's what I mean. That's the kind of stuff that I'm looking at. Hela, is that her name?
Yes.
Yeah. There we go. Okay, cool. I had to Google that. I'm really embarrassed because Kate Blanchett in that role was phenomenal. I kept on thinking Kate Blanchett. I was like, no, it's that's the actor's name. I want the character's name. But yeah, I'm looking forward to more stuff from Disney Plus, and I'm hoping they do more animated stuff too. I kind of wonder if they're going to do more stuff with Thrawn in a future animated series.
They could. I know that not Star Wars related, but I know a bunch of their Disney XD stuff that was animated but didn't get renewed kind of on the XD channel thing. A bunch of that stuff is getting new episodes being pushed right to Disney Plus.
Oh, in 5 days, the last season of Clone Wars hits Disney Plus.
Yep.
Like there's,
but also the new DuckTales series had a third season.
Oh, cool.
Rushed to order. And something else is being rushed to order.
Interesting. So yeah, I mean, if you're itching for more Star Wars stuff, then Mark, I think maybe Disney Plus might be the way to look. I hope they get more than just the Mandalorian in series. I would like to see some Star Wars series. That story, again, without any spoilers, that story was told so well over 8 episodes, so much better than a 2-hour film. And
yeah,
I would love to have more stuff like that, because it allows them to tell it at a pace that is palpable and gritty and panning down to a planet and doing all that kind of stuff that you can take the time to do when you've got 8 hours to tell a story, or well, more like 6.5, but still, like, that really Star Wars just eats, sleeps and breathes for that kind of content delivery, compared to, you know, 2.5-hour blockbuster films where everything is just like, and then this happened and then this happened. So, speaking of space, I will give an honorable mention to what I have been consuming. I can't really speak at length about it because I'm still very much in the throes of season 2 of The Expanse. I am behind. I'm aware of this. Season 4, I think, just came out. I had started season 1 and I did not realize, but I didn't finish it. I fell off of it. I don't know whether it was because I thought it was slow or whether something else came up. I've got a funny feeling that either Star Wars or Marvel or something kind of happened and I ended up being pulled out of watching The Expanse. I also could have lost access to it because it wasn't on any cable network that I was watching, and you know, I don't have cable, so access to it with streaming services might not have been feasible back when it was on space. But then Amazon Prime picked it up, and I, because of the gaming PC I built in the fall, I still have Amazon Prime because I am enjoying the content, but also because I'm still ordering some stuff, and having free shipping is fantastic. So with The Expanse, I now have access to all the other seasons. So I thought about it, and then I realized, you know, it's a pretty thick show. I should go back and try to find out where I was in season 1. Turns out I wasn't that far, and I just started from the beginning again. So it took me a while to kind of get through season one. Two, stuff where it was absolutely new content, which was probably like 2/3 of the way through.
Yeah.
The end of season one is where, had I continued to watch season one and finished it, I would have been hooked. They do some wicked stuff in season one at the end of The Expanse, and it really goes past where you thought it was going. It really becomes something else, more than what I was expecting. And so I immediately let season two play, and I'm now 4 or 5 episodes into season two. It's the one thing that I watch in the evening after dinner. I might not finish a whole episode. Sometimes I only get through half of one. I do find there are some parts where I find it slow. There's some one-dimensional characters that aren't main characters that I roll my eyes at. And just sometimes if it's about that time to get up off the couch, I don't make it through that scene. I hit pause, I check my phone or something, and then I just never get back to it till the next day. But ultimately, I am liking every episode. I really enjoy Stephen Strait as Jim Holden. I think he's fantastic. Yep. I wasn't sure about Wes Chatham, Amos Burton.
He grows on you.
He does. And they really did excellent writing for him in season two. He went from being a really annoying kind of like loose cannon for me in season one to... I think he upped his performance. I think he's been better in season two, but also he has had better writing and better situations to then showcase that better acting.
Right.
He's not just a dumb thug, which I did sort of feel they wrote him as in season one. They give him more nuance, and he's a little bit more aware, I feel, of the surroundings and the people that he's dealing with. As Amos Burton. Anyway, I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't get the chance to see him. He was actually here, Wes Chatham was here in HalCon last year. But he has a really solid presence. Like, I enjoy him. Everybody else, take it or leave it. They're all good actors. I feel like they're all kind of in roles that they're just very kind of okay at, you know, like in terms of like, you know, the head of secretary, the head of state, all that kind of stuff. It's all political stuff. It's like watching The West Wing. So like, no one is really kind of blowing me away outside of Stephen Strait and Chatham. Well,
what I like about this show is everything changes season to season.
Yeah. Oh, it feels
like the whole the whole world changes, the whole universe changes, and the books kind of do that too. Where when you start the next book or the next season, you really don't know where they're going to be when the season starts.
Yeah.
I've watched all of it. I'll be curious what you think of the current season.
Yeah, and I've purposely been avoiding that. There's a lot of people in my Discord that are very much on top of it. And thankfully, we have a spoilers section so that everybody can talk freely about it in there. But I've kind of put it out there on the Discord as well that I am watching, so please don't get into details, because I would very much like to experience the show on its own.
I will say this. One of the things I think you'll like about the most current season is it's definitely shorter than the regular seasons. I think it's only like 10 episodes. Mm-hmm. And it definitely is like one story arc and done.
Yeah.
And it does. One of the things I hated about when it was on Sci-Fi Here and Sci-Fi Here
old format
was, yep, it felt like they were trying to force too many episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of you'll watch 3 or 4 episodes where there's like telling a story, and then all of a sudden there's kind of like an episode where you feel like it's filler.
Yep. Yep.
And
that's where I tune out. Yep.
Yeah. And that goes away probably in the third season.
Do we remember when it was picked up by Prime?
The season 4 is the current, I believe, is the current season that Prime published.
Okay.
But they started to do away with it in season 3.
Yeah, you're right. So network with Sci-Fi 1, 2, and 3, Prime Video season 4.
And they started to do that with season 3 as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Season 1, 10 episodes. Season 2, season 3, 13 episodes. And then season 4 is back to 10.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, I like it. I highly recommend it. I really enjoy the way that they portray space. It is sci-fi, but and in the future, there's colonies on, you know, Mars and the outer asteroid belts and Earth, but it's still rail guns and bullets. Like, there's not lasers and, you know, it's not so far out there that it's not feasible. It has a Battlestar Galactica vibe to it.
Yeah.
That I really enjoy. It's very much like submarines in space. It has, and it has that kind of danger to it. It has that kind of claustrophobic feel to it. But you have to give it enough time. And I want to say you have to get all the way through to the end of season one before you can really understand the crew, understand their relationships with one another, and start to pick favorites, enjoy relationships, see subtleties, and then you're hooked. Because then you're just like, I am no longer in it to find out what's happening in the universe. I'm in it to explore the characters that I like. Like, you know, Holden the hero is who I identify with, and I want to see how he handles the situation. I don't care what happens in the universe. I want to see how Holden reacts. I want to see how Naomi and Amos react. Amos, I don't remember how they pronounce it.
It's Amos.
Amos. I thought his name was Seamus for the longest time. I think
sometimes when certain characters say his name, it can definitely come across.
Yeah, the Belters have got a funny accent the way that they portray it in the show, and they're sometimes hard to navigate and hard to kind of hear. The only character that I'm not super thrilled about is Joe Miller, the detective. I find him he creates interesting situations because he's a bit of a loose cannon, but I find him one note. I don't find him interesting when he's on screen. That's generally when I'm trying to tune out a little bit. Everything he does action wise is unpredictable. I find his character to be very predictable, if that makes any sense. His demeanor is always the same.
He's really just there to move the story forward. I won't say anything because I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, no, it's fine. All right, cool. So what have you been watching in the many, many, many hours that you've been stuck on the couch?
So the first thing I'm going to recommend is actually a game, and I'm going to recommend that people don't play it.
Really?
Yeah. While I've been out with my busted leg, a friend of mine lent me Luigi's Mansion to play on my Switch. If you like Ghostbusters, the Luigi Mansion games are fun because that's what you are. You're Luigi the Ghostbuster. You wander around a mansion catching ghosts, sucking them up like a Ghostbuster, but he's using a vacuum cleaner instead of plasma beams. They've always been kind of fun. Luigi's Mansion 3 is garbage. Absolute,
really
pure garbage.
Is that the one that Ryan was playing at Christmas time? How long has it been out?
It's been out since Halloween.
Okay,
it
came out that's on probably Day. What Ryan was playing. He seemed to really enjoy it, but
it's garbage.
fighting words.
The premise is neat. They all get Mario and everybody gets summoned to a hotel for a holiday. It's all set up to get Luigi there so they can capture everybody in the hotel is haunted. And so as Luigi, you have to start in the basement and go 35 floors to rescue all of your friends. There's gems in the game that, like, every floor has like 6 gems you need to find. They imply that these are important. You get nothing when you find them. It goes, yay, you got an achievement. I just wasted 3 hours looking for these gems and it didn't do anything.
No game mechanic. Great. It's just...
No, yeah. The game tells you, because you have 2 triggers on top, and you have 4 face buttons, and it tells you, oh, you want to use your flashlight? You have to push the Y button, which is a face button. But when you're moving Luigi, you need to move him with one analog stick and point him in a different direction with another. So pushing a face button means you have to stop what you're doing and pushing it to get him to activate his flashlight.
Right.
What you find out by playing the game is that one of the top triggers does the same thing too, and the game never tells you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff like that. Like, the game tells you what button to do something, And then there's an easier way to do it that the game doesn't tell you, and you have to figure out on your way, on your own.
Interesting. I think a lot of the people that I listen to on podcasts that are, you know, video game, you know, enthusiasts are also kind of like Nintendo apologists. They tend to just love everything Nintendo does. And I have not heard anything bad about Luigi's Mansion. I barely hear anything bad about the Switch, but it's kind of refreshing to kind of hear that Luigi's Mansion is a steaming pile of nothing.
I've only had my Switch like 3 months. I've enjoyed most of the games I've played on it. There's been a couple that I've been like, yep, nope, glad I didn't buy this. I'm glad that someone lent this to me because I'm not going to play it anymore. This has been one of those. Every floor has a boss fight. So and the boss fights are, they're all super expectant. There's the character, the monster, the ghost attacks you. You have to dodge, wait for an opening, use something in the environment to knock the ghost over. And then he comes back and he does it harder the next time. Mm-hmm. You got to dodge him again. And it's all expectant. Some of the stuff goes on to the point where there's a boss fight I fought. It wasn't hard. It still took me 30 minutes. Because that's how long his attack sequences were. Ugh. That you run around and dodge for 8 minutes, waiting for him to have the opening in 8 minutes.
That doesn't sound fun.
And I'm like, this is not fun. And Luigi has to find buttons to go up in the elevator because the buttons are missing. They literally do a gimmick where you fight a boss fight, and this is like the third floor. There's a boss fight. You beat this boss in a kitchen. He drops the elevator button. You're like, yay, I can go to the next floor. You go to pick it up. A mouse comes out of nowhere, steals the button, and runs off with it. You then have to chase the mouse down a hallway, go into another room, fight another like mini boss fight. Think you're about to get the button again. Another mouse jumps out, steals the button, and runs off down the hallway. They do this to you on this one floor 4 times. And I was like, and it to the point where they're making you go back to rooms you've already done. And I'm like, no, I'm done. I gave it back to my friend. I was like, no. He's like, oh yeah, I had the same problem. He goes, I got slightly further than you did and went, yeah, no, I'm not bothering with this game anymore.
I've heard that about several games this year, listening to different podcasts. I can't name them. I know Jedi Fallen Order was another one, but the repeating areas that you've already been in order to complete new goals, but really you're just rehashing old environments that are hard to traverse.
Yep.
And how it sucks the fun and adventure out of it because you just have to do what you did before again with harder bad guys. And it feels like, and I don't want to say lazy development because that implies something else, but it just feels like a decision to try to stretch more out of a game than was available. And it, from what I can tell from players' experiences, it would be better to have a 20-hour game that you go through once than a 40-hour game that you go through twice.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So I won't say too much more about Luigi's Mansion. Just don't buy. Yeah. If it's something that sounds like you want to have fun for a weekend, spend $5 and rent it.
Right.
And that's it. Like I've played maybe 4 or 5 hours of it. I was beating my head against a wall by the time I was done.
Wow. That's not a long time. Considering that, you know, most games are, you know, especially like Nintendo games tend to be a little bit longer. Yeah, that's
done. I was like, no, I'm done. This is too frustrating. Give up. The thing I have enjoyed and I've watched from beginning to end is, if you haven't watched it yet, Lock and Key on Netflix is amazing.
So we'll keep it spoiler free because I do want to watch it. But also, I'm sure this is fairly new. So some people listening may not have even heard of it or are watching and haven't finished it yet. This to me sounds interesting because I'm familiar with the comic, not because I've read it, but because so many of my comic artist friends or people we interviewed on Comics Coast to Coast over the years loved this series.
I've read most of the comic, not all of it. I think I've read like halfway through the series. So I knew kind of where the first season was going to go, but it definitely goes in some different directions than the comic. Some of the tone of the show is much lighter than the comic. One of the characters in the comic book has a death wish and wants to get himself killed, and kind of takes a lot of risks he shouldn't be taking. And it kind of gets depressing because he kind of wishes he was dead. It's much lighter in the show.
Right.
I think the show is actually better than the comic. A personal opinion.
Nice.
It's just a different way of telling the same story. If you're not familiar, the comic is by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez, I think it is. Joe Hill is also Stephen King's son. So this is very much, feels very much kind of like a Stephen King story in a way. The Locke family comes from, in the comic book, it's called Lovecraft, Massachusetts. In the show, they've changed it to Matheson, Massachusetts, which is a reference to the author that wrote I Am Legend.
Okay.
And several other, Richard Matheson. It's a reference to him instead. They felt uncomfortable using Lovecraft as the name of the town in the live action show because there's already a lot of Lovecraft stuff.
Right. It separates them out a little bit, makes them feel a little bit different. Yeah.
And the Locke family, they were living on the West Coast. Their father gets murdered in a tragedy. And the mother, not knowing what to do, moves them back to the father's ancestral home where no one has lived in years.
Mm.
And the kids move into the house and weird things start to happen. One of the kids hears a voice out in the old well house and they find a key and the key has magical abilities. And slowly they learn that the house is full of keys that do weird things.
Right. Okay. It's starting to come back to me now. I knew that the key was key. Wow. That was terrible. I knew that the keys were important and had some sort of fantasy element to it. So it's described on Wikipedia as horror/contemporary fantasy. Would you find it? Do you think it's more of a comic book adventure or is it definitely like a horror book?
It's definitely a horror. These demons and stuff in the show.
Right. Okay. So it's a horror, but more, less of a gory kind of like horror fest.
Yeah. The comic book is also much gorier.
Oh, okay. So this is what I don't like about horror stuff and what Netflix tends to be pumping at everyone all the time is this really over the top horror things. And
this is very, I think they knew that they needed to get a PG-13 kind of rating for this.
Okay.
And one of the main characters is like a 9-year-old kid. So I get the distinct impression that they toned this down so that this might be something that everybody can watch. There is a little bit of blood and guts. They show the father get killed at one point. And in all honesty, it's not really that gory. In the comic, it's like you watch him get blown away kind of thing. And it's really gory. And in the show, it's really kind of like you just see him get shot. Hmm. And you're like, oh, okay.
I'm looking on the Wikipedia article and it doesn't say in an easy place to find what the rating is, but that sounds, I mean, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was on primetime and that had, you know, blood and stuff in it too. So
like, I think that's probably the best comparison. Some of the things that I've watched on Netflix recently, have had some major amounts of gore. I just recently watched the third season of Sabrina.
Oh yeah. I've heard that's been a lot of stuff.
And that show is like, you're watching people get disemboweled. There's demons. Mm. It knows its audience, but, that show's not bad, but not great. This definitely feels like they toned stuff down because they were worried that they wanted to get, this would be fine on primetime.
Right. So, you know, that's good. I'm glad that Netflix put something out that has a little bit more of a broader appeal. Because I think that when you do that, it encourages better writing and better storytelling rather than just shock factor. You know, like you're not trying to just gross out or shock the audience into being scared. You have to kind of, well, there has to be some level of suspense, right?
Yeah. And that, it's been a while since I read the comic. I read the comic when it came out. So I had forgotten some of the plot twists that the comic does. And while the show does a few things differently, there were things that I was like, oh yeah, now I remember why there's a plot twist. Okay. And watching it with Erica had never read the comic. And so she was like hooked on the edge of her seat being like, yeah, so we're going to finish that this morning, right? And I was like, yeah, okay.
Nice. Okay, cool. Well, it sounds like a great show. I don't normally get into horror, but this kind of a crossover comic book horror, you know.
It's as much as a modern fantasy as it is horror.
Cool.
The horror is kind of like the magic they use kind of has a setback. You know what I mean?
Right, okay.
Like Price. There's nothing as easy as it looks.
Right. Okay, cool. I am very interested in it because it is filmed in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia, which is 45 minutes away from me. Not surprising now that I hear that it's set in a fictitious Maine town because...
Massachusetts, actually.
New England is basically what I'm getting at.
Yes.
Is because Lunenburg and a good part of the coastal towns in Nova Scotia would be very easily pass for small town Massachusetts or Maine or, you know, Rhode Island or whatever. It's Lunenburg was founded in 1753, but saw a lot of growth in the 1800s, which is where most of the historic architecture dates from. So a very old family home would actually make a lot of sense to be, you know, filmed there. The downtown core is actually part of a National Historic Site here in Canada. It's a beautiful spot. If you look up Lunenburg, Nova Scotia on Google and Google image search, you'll see some pretty shots, very picturesque, kind of what I think a lot of people think of when they think of like Nova Scotia port town or fishing town like that. I think that's kind of what what they think of. And, I haven't been there in a long time. Actually, the last time I was down there, I was filming a documentary with a guy that was the filmmaker, and I was helping him out. And I got to see some very pretty spots going down there. And one of the hikes I went on that this summer was just outside of Lunenburg, but it was on the coast. We weren't in the city at all.
I will say they do a lot of like panning and outdoor shots, and it's definitely gorgeous.
Oh, it's picturesque. Yeah. Really cool time is to be down there during like race week. A lot of yachts and sailboats and stuff, and lots of parties. And there's, I can't remember what kind of event it was, but it's like bookshop hopping or something. There's an event. Lunenburg and Mahone Bay have become kind of like artist and culture centers here in the province. So you can like go and have like, you know, it's not a poetry reading, but it's essentially like you might be going there to have like authors read part of their books or see an art gallery. But because the town doesn't have a dedicated space, shops will like become an art gallery for the evening for this like sidewalk street walk event. But Nova Scotians like to drink, so everything's licensed. So you go and have a glass of wine at this, what used to be, you know, a bookshop or a cafe during the day, but is now set up to be like an art gallery thing at night. And I'm struggling to remember the name of the event, but it sounds like a lot of fun. I've just not had the opportunity to do it. All of this, of course, happens in the summertime when there's not 15 centimeters of snow on the ground. So right now everybody is kind of like enjoying their inside pub time, I'm sure.
So not to spoil anything with Lock and Key, but two of my favorite things in the show were cameos.
Oh, interesting.
There's a group of kids in the show that are filmmakers, and they call themselves the Savinis in reference to Tom Savini, the special effects artist who did the Night of the Living Dead and a bunch of other horror movies. And Savini now teaches special effects in Pennsylvania or something like that. And he's in his 60s. And they spend like three episodes with them basically hammering home. This group of kids, they call themselves the Savinis. This group of kids, they call themselves the Savinis. And then at one point, one of the littlest kid ends up in like a he ends up in a hardware store, And he goes up to the counter and he says, I'd like to buy some keys. Do you have like old keys or something I can buy? And the guy that answer turns around from the bench is Tom Savini.
That's great. It's like a little Easter egg.
Yeah, and the kid, he looks over at the kid and he goes, you want some keys? Hold on, I got some keys for you. And he pulls out a jar of keys and he gives it to the kid. And the kid goes, thanks. And the kid, he's like, you can keep them, no charge. And the kid's like, you're awesome. It runs off. And I was like, that's Tom Savini. And I'm getting all excited. And Erica looks at me and goes, what?
Like, who's like, that? Yeah.
I'm like, that's the guy that group's named after. And she goes, oh, and I'm like, I need to make you watch more horror movies. She said no.
That's cool, though. Like, that was probably a real treat for him.
Yeah. And the other cameo is Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez make a cameo at the end.
Oh, that's cool.
And if you don't know what they look like, you'll recognize them as soon as they show up.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Joe Hill looks a lot like his father. So as soon as you see his cameo makes an appearance, he's only on camera for like maybe 60 seconds. But as soon as you see him, you go, oh, yeah, okay, I know who that was. And then Gabriel Rodriguez is like right next to him in the shot. And you're like, oh, okay, okay, I get it. They're making a cameo in their own show. That's awesome.
Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by, of course, you. If you enjoy the Sizzle Cafe, we are 100% listener supported. If you're getting some value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. You can become a member at patreon.com/thesizzlecafe. Every little bit helps. It is completely up to you. There are perks like the member-only Discord, where we share all kinds of nerdy stuff all week long. Also, there are bonus episodes, Discord roles, and stuff like that. I am working on some new goals and some new rewards. So if you have an idea, if you don't see something that you like and you want to shoot me a message, then let me know. You can do that at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Patreon count is at 20. We would like to make that 21 by the time March rolls around. Last time I checked was just today. So each month I try to have at least one more patron than the month before. It increases our ranks and just provides another nerd for everyone to talk to. So come on in. It's at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. My nerdy pick this week is once again a Lego set. But it is the Lego Ideas set for the International Space Station. It's set 21321. It's over at lego.com. It is only $99 Canadian, which was surprising to me. I would think that something like that would be more expensive, considering that it is 864 pieces, 7 inches high, 12 inches deep, and 19 inches long. When I saw this photo with a person holding it, I thought, wow, that has to be almost 14 inches long. I was wrong. It's nearly 14 inches deep. It's 19 inches long. It's almost 2 foot long. And it's a lot of little pieces. I don't anticipate this is going to be a short build, despite the fact that it's sub 1,000 pieces. It was designed by Christophe Rouge, and he's been a longtime Lego fan and designer. It's always great to see Lego take Lego Ideas builds, which, for those of you that don't know, these are things that are built by non-Lego employees. They're built by adult enthusiasts, sometimes kid enthusiasts, but they're built by enthusiasts that love Lego. And they submit them and get them voted on at legoideas.com. And then Lego has decided to take the top voted stuff and turn them into actual released sets. I think the last time I did an official Lego Ideas set here on the show, it might have been the rover. It might have been one of the Mars rovers, which is, again, it's also another space thing. But it was also done by Lego Ideas. It's obviously a great gift for the space nerd in your life, but it just looks really cool. It looks more like a model than a Lego toy. Like, it really has a lot of detail.
If you told me this, if you took the away shot of this and didn't tell me it was Lego, I would not think it was a Lego thing.
Yeah, I think a part of it has to do with either the specific pieces or perhaps the decals that they have on the solar panels that power the International Space Station.
Yeah.
It gives it a lot of finer detail that you don't normally get in Lego, but also because of the scale of the station. And the scale of Lego, to make it a feasible set, they had to make it what's called a micro scale. So a minifig that you think about with Lego, the size of a little person, that doesn't apply here. The person that they have, there is a little spaceman. They have a little human in a spacesuit, and he barely fits on one Lego nub, like one little piece. So he's really, really tall, or really, really tiny. He's maybe half the size of a pen cap. So, so that's the kind of scale that they have going on in order to include the entire thing. Like a space shuttle is barely as long as the end of your thumb. It's like a little micro build. I've not done a micro build. I usually prefer minifig scale stuff when I do Lego, but this to me is really interesting. And wow, talk about a price point. Like normally when I see Lego that I'm interested in, that's in the 800 plus, you know, 1,000 pieces, it's usually one of those creator sets. They are easily $300.
Right.
For this to be a real thing, a model of the real International Space Station, and only 99 Canadian. I don't know what that is, what it shows up as in America, but that's affordable. Like that's an excellent model gift, you know, for a space nerd. So yeah, that's my pick. We'll have images and links, of course, in the show notes. But check it out at lego.com, and do yourself a favor if you like Lego, check out legoideas.com. I think it's really cool. Do you have a pick this week?
I do. So since I was bedridden and stuck on my couch and looking for stuff to watch, I fell back into an old YouTube series I hadn't watched in years called Zero Punctuation, where a grumpy British guy speeds up his voice and basically nitpicks and picks fun of every game he sent to review. It's called Zero Punctuation, and they took all of 2019 and every review he did and put it all together into one four-hour video on YouTube.
4 hours? Oh, my gosh.
It's like 4.5 hours. I left this running while I was working all afternoon one day. And let's just say it was highly distracting in a good way. So if you want to watch somebody play a game and then make fun of every mechanic, make fun of every, even games you like, Zero Punctuation will do that. So definitely worth your time, even if you just give it about 20 minutes.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can find more information about the show and links to all the things that Lou and I talked about this week at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show is composed by Kevin McLeod. You can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Please keep those coming. They're a lot of fun. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. Subscribe on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, and now YouTube. Link, again, is going to be in the show notes. But you know what? A word of mouth is the easiest way to support the show. Poke a friend in the arm and say, hey, you should listen to this. You have to hear the story about how Lou destroyed his femur and then talk about horror filmed in Nova Scotia. You can find me at joelduggan.com. It's my illustration portfolio. It has links to all the other podcasts that I do, including the Spawn Chunks, which is all about Minecraft. New snapshot came out this week. We have a great deal to talk about over there at spawnchunks.com, so check that out. You can find me at Joel Duggan on all social media that matters. And of course, check me out on Twitch, where I'm doing live art, I'm playing video games, and hanging out with a fantastic community, not unlike the community that surrounds this podcast. I think you will enjoy yourself no matter where you decide to check out the kind of stuff that I'm doing online. Lou, I'm so glad that you are here. I'm so glad that you're on the mend. Where can people find you and all the wonderful stuff that you're doing online?
In the next few weeks, we will be resuming Zombies Ate My Podcast. So stay tuned for that. We're going to jump right back in with some zombie movies immediately. I believe we may be watching the new Zombieland, at least in the next. I think that might be our first episode back. We haven't decided yet. And you can also find me anywhere under the name Busy Zombie Lord. I'm on all the social media.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.